Hi everyone, I'm Liam, and welcome to another episode of Exploring the NQS, a bonus series from the Early Education Show exclusively for our Patreon supporters. So if you're listening to this, that means you're supporting the main show, which means I want to start, as usual, with a big thank you. The main show will always be free, but those of you who choose to actually support us financially really, really help us out. In Exploring the NQS, I take a look at one element of the National Quality Standard one at a time until I've covered all 40. My background is as an early childhood educator, teacher, and centre director, and I currently oversee professional development and professional learning and development for Northside Community Service, a not-for-profit early education provider based in Canberra. All right, introductions out of the way, let's get started. This week we have element 1.2.3. Child-directed learning. It's part of Quality Area 1, Educational Program and Practice, and it's the third and final element of Standard 1.2, Practice. The description for this element is, each child's agency is promoted, enabling them to make choices and decisions that influence events and their world. All right, so what's this one all about? This one, another really critical one. This whole standard is one of the linchpins of the National Quality Standard, this practice component. This element, we're really thinking about how do services and educators encourage and support children to be involved or to lead or to take significant roles in planning in terms of what's happening in the classroom and being able to make decisions about their own play and their own learning. This is, you know, really a fundamental level about children's right to participate and be heard. And that's why, you know, it's really important that it starts off with that each child's agency is promoted. We'll talk a bit about that concept of agency in the in-practice section, but this is a really fundamental part of the National Quality Standard about children's right to, to be significant players in what happens in the service and what happens in their own learning. So it's a really great one to be working on with your team. All right, let's take a look at this element in practice. This is another one where I'm starting to regret that we only have 15 minutes to go through, but we'll another one that can't be, you know, really covered in depth. So this is really, I think, best to think of as a starting point for you and your team to go and find out more about this. There's also another one that's really individual to your service. How this works with your particular communities of children, educators, and families will look really different. I want to start with a point here around the difference between this element, child-directed learning, and the element we covered 2 weeks ago, element 1.2.1, intentional teaching. Now, it's really important from my perspective, at least, to say that intentional teaching and child-directed learning are not opposites. They're not the opposite of each other. Even though I think sometimes we maybe fall into that trap, we summarize in that way, and we say intentional teaching is about what educators are doing, educators planning things without children's input, and child-directed learning is kind of is learning that's directed by the child, and those two things are opposite. But you know, they're really not. They actually complement each other. You know, in child-directed learning, educators don't stand back and do nothing. We don't put our feet up for the day and let the children run the show. That's not what's happening. Child-directed learning involves support and guidance from educators. And in many cases, it's about creating the space for children to make decisions and lead learnings on particularly things that are meaningful for them. Just as we've talked about with intentional teaching, isn't about the educator going, well, we're doing this and I don't care what children think. Of course, that's not what it's about. It's about the educators informing their intentional decisions based on how well they know children and what children are bringing to them. So they're not opposites. They really do complement each other. But as I said, you know, how can we create the space for children to make decisions and lead learning? This is another really vital teaching practice, which is why the standard is one of the, you know, the linchpins of the National Quality Standard. And, you know, for me in practice, what this means is the way we think about this is thinking about opening doors and not closing them. So that means when children come to us with particular questions or particular ideas, trying to say yes more often rather than no, or when children are asking us questions, not necessarily just answering them straight away. You know, we would see this with young children where they'd go, well, You know, why are the, you know, at a really, a bit of a cliched example, but, you know, why are the leaves falling? Now, we could probably just answer that for them. Or there could be a process of investigation, a process of discovering together. That's a really powerful thing to do with children. You know, that's I think, for me, one of the reasons I've worked in early childhood and always will until the end of my career, that process of discovering things together is always wonderful. It's always so much fun, and it's always so much better for children when they're part of that learning process. So that's what I often talk about that with educators, is how can we open doors? How can we create opportunities rather than closing doors or shutting down opportunities? You know, there's a really simple way to resolve a particular situation, or we could look at or branch out and do a lot of other different things. So that idea of discovering together, really, really important. The other important part of this element for me is that it's not just about following children's interests. I hear that as a bit of a catchphrase, a bit of a thing I hear in the sector a lot, particularly in interviews when I'm interviewing team leaders, and I'll ask about their approach to program and practice to quality area one, and they'll talk about following children's interests, and I find that really interesting, because what I think it often means for people is that, you know, children say, well, I'm interested in dinosaurs, so we put dinosaurs in the sandpit or something, and that's really, you know, not expressive of the depth of this element and the depth of the teaching practice here. So this idea of child-directed learning is really a lot broader than just following children's interest. It has to start for an educator with that image of child and a child's agency. We talked about image of child before in this podcast and on the main podcast as well, but it's that idea of, you know, that central vision of children you have in you that affects how you teach and engage, whether you think children are competent and capable or whether you think they're empty vessels waiting to be filled are probably the two most extreme examples. But agency is a big part of this as well. And agency is about that idea that from birth, you know, the youngest of children have an ability and the right to influence the world around them. That influence can mean a whole bunch of different things, whether it's, you know, big or small, you know, in a moment or over a long period of time. But what we say is if we buy into the idea that children have agency, and the early years learning framework kind of means that we have to, is that we want to be observing and noticing how children influence the world around them, but then we want to also be supporting that. And that's the critical role for the educator here in this element, is we're in a kind of support and guidance role. And how can we, as I sort of said before, how can we open doors for children and not close them? I find this is one where I think we possibly as a sector, and I know I would have been guilty of this, you know, as much as anyone else, is I think this is something we say a lot, that oh, of course we think children have agency and of course we think they could influence their world, but I don't know whether that always translates into practice. So you know, an example of that might be, you know, we say that we, oh yes, you know, children have a really strong voice in when that happens, but routine times are kind of put onto children. So lunch has to happen at this time. Children can't go to a different, you know, classroom at a particular time and see their sibling, those kind of things. Now, there are always operational issues around those things, but if we say we have a big focus on children's agency and making decisions about their own learning, then we really have to think, well, is that visible in the classroom? And as I sort of said right back in our first episode of this series, how particular elements of teaching practice are visible in classrooms is a huge indication to me. If I can walk in and see without being explained that, I get how they do this, it's wonderful to walk into a classroom, and you may have classrooms like this in your service or you visited them, where you walk into a classroom and you know straight away, without having to talk to an educator, without having to see the philosophy, without having to see the program, the written program on the wall, you know that children are valued in the classroom, and their ability to contribute is engaged, that children are citizens in this classroom. And that concept of children as citizens is a big part of this element as well. It's also important really quickly here, I'm already seeing I'm almost at 9 minutes. I really wish I had more time for this element, but that concept of children as citizens is a great way to start thinking about this with your team. So, you know, citizens of our community have a range of different things they can do in our community. They can make their own decisions. They can be part of the shape and the flow of the community. It's a great way to think about children is as citizens and having the same rights as all the other citizens in our community. And a great way to also think about that is being citizens means we have rights and responsibilities. One of the criticisms of, and particularly I think outside the sector, although I think you occasionally see this in the sector as well, one of the criticisms of this approach, it means, oh, well, children can just do whatever they want and they run riot and we're not allowed to do any, you know, we're not allowed to, you know, encourage them to make positive, you know, all those kind of things. And that's not what that's about at all. Children as citizens If citizens have rights and responsibilities, they have a responsibility to the community. And that's a great way to talk about that with children, that if we're giving them the space and the ability to contribute as a citizen, we need to remind them that's important you do that positively. And when that doesn't happen, that we engage and work through those issues. Rights and responsibilities as citizens. That's a great way to think about how we can initiate child-directed learning in services. The last part, sort of in practice, I want to talk about here is this is a really great lens to look at through routines and transition times, because children choosing when and how particular things happen has particular implications for, you know, those regular transition routine times, and particularly for things that can often be quite tricky and sometimes even controversial in the sector, which is around things like progressive meal times, the ability to do indoor-outdoor play, which can be challenging for educators, but really, if we're taking child-directed learning seriously, they're really critical. They're foundational. The transitions and those routine times are often where the biggest behavior issues can come into play, because children feel like they don't have a voice there. They don't have a say. They're feeling kind of moved from one thing to another without really being able to make decisions around that. So if you're in a team that's struggling with that, this is a really great way to think about it, that it's not just because it's a fad or because people just suddenly think it's a great idea. It's because this is really about child-directed learning, that the best way for children to succeed is when they know themselves and they're able to make decisions about, well, I feel tired now, I will have a rest now, I'm hungry now, I'd like to come in and eat now, I feel like playing outside now, I feel like playing inside. Operational issues, of course, are always really important, and we need to make sure we're upholding the laws and the regulations at all time, but are there more opportunities to be engaging with things like progressive meal times and those indoor-outdoor plays, the ways we could make them more child-focused. All right, we'll wrap up as we always do with both suggestions for nominated supervisors and some ideas for your quality improvement plan. For nominated supervisors, again, this is the last element of a really important, critical standard of the National Quality Standard. So, if there's any standard you spend a lot of time thinking about, I'd really recommend this one. For this element, child-directed learning, I'd really be looking at staff meetings and readings and working with your team around that idea of what image of child and agency means, and particularly through the lens of children as participants in society, as civic participants. This is a great way to work with educators who maybe are struggling with this. Maybe that's not the values they held coming into the service, or maybe it's not the values they were raised with, where children were viewed differently. But the idea that children can participate, I think, is one everyone can get on board with. So it's about work with your team. Also maybe thinking about, is that called out in the philosophy? And this is the really important part. If that is called out in the philosophy, and I usually see something about children's rights and children's voice, and we listen to children's voices and follow children's interests, that's pretty much in most philosophies we see. The question then is, if that is in there, is it visible in practice? Is it actually happening, or is this just something we're writing on the wall and handing out to families at induction time? I think it should be in the philosophy, and particularly if it is, we then have to be seeing it in practice. The other suggestion, for people leading teams, is really using this element as a catalyst to persist and stick with child-focused planning, even when services are struggling or it's seeming really difficult, it's really challenging, it's creating issues. But this is really encouraging us to stick with that and keep going. Where progressive meal times are challenging, where indoor-outdoor staff are struggling to get on board with that, I understand there are often big changes for services. But this is really encouraging us to really take a second look at that and go for it again. The advice I'd do here is, visit services that do it if you can. If you're in an area where there's services around, there aren't that many services that if you call up and go, hey, I'm from down the road, is it okay if we visit? There aren't that many services that would say no. People love to visit other services, and it may just be that you get the payment for that is that you invite them into your service, and what a great way to build some connections. So this is a really good one for people to see in practice, to see how it looks in a service that really engages with this. So if it's something you want to think about, pick up the phone, do some Googling of your local area, and maybe pick up the phone. For your quality improvement plan, a couple of guidance ones here. One goal I would have would be that children are involved in the planning for big changes and projects in meaningful ways. The instinct here would be to have a goal maybe saying that children are involved in everything, and we just can't do that. That's unreasonable. That's putting too much on ourselves. So a good starting point may be for big changes and projects. That might, the particular things I'd be thinking about there would be when we change the environment of our classroom. It's really important children are involved in that. Imagine if we came into work on a Monday and, you know, someone had moved our office around or moved everything in the classroom and we had no idea. So that's kind of what we do for children sometimes. So involving children in those kind of things is a really great way to begin this process of involving children in learning. And then the other one I would do, which kind of touches on this point as well, is that all classrooms have opportunities for children to make decisions about things that are important to them. That's a great way for individual classrooms to do particular things, whether it's in the nursery or the toddler or the preschool space. You're setting up the goal that we want to make sure that children have opportunities to contribute and engage. I think that's a really good starting point for that idea. All right, that's it for another week. Thank you again for joining us. Thank you again for supporting the show on Patreon. We really can't articulate how much we really value that support. I'll be back next week. We're starting with a whole new standard, the last standard of Quality Area 1, Standard 1.3. And there are three elements in that as well. So we'll be wrapping that up before we know it. But until then, it's goodbye from me.